Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Well, our Ramble Meets guest this week is the longest-serving manager in the EFL and Premier League. Last summer, he took Wycombe Wanderers into the Championship for the first time in their history, just 6 years after they almost slipped back into the conference and out of the league itself. He drives an orange Mustang, he wears his hair long, he's the front man for the band Cold-Blooded Heart. He's a Broadchurch. He once said he'd rather be Mick Jagger than Lionel Messi. Here's Gareth Ainsworth. Gareth, you're very welcome. I hope you're well and your family in these mad days.
Oh, very nice introduction. Yeah, very good, Mark. Thank you.
Would you really rather be Mick Jagger than Lionel Messi?
Oh, come on. Who wouldn't? Believe me. Yeah. what a life, you know. And honestly, that is the truth. You know, I was growing up, music was a huge part of my life. People know now, Mum was a professional singer. So music always in the house. Dad was a big rock and roll fan. And I was going down that route, and football sort of took over. Got good at football, and really, you know, as that age, it was one or the other. Football was probably more accessible than being a worldwide rock star, and so that's what took over. Yeah.
The great thing about growing up in a musical household, of course, is that even sort of by osmosis, you just absorb lots of different genres of music, don't you? Which possibly at sometimes you're thinking, why are they listening to that? And then you wake up one day, we all do this, and we go, oh, I really like that sort of music.
Absolutely. You know, and it's true nowadays, you know, some of the stuff my kids listen to, I'm thinking, what the heck is that? Come on, let's listen to a little bit of this. And they're like, Dad, that is rubbish. That is so old. But hopefully one day they'll appreciate it. But yeah, it was a big The Who, The Stones, The Doors, you know, all through the house. And Mum was a big Dusty Springfield, Brenda Lee, that sort of genre, you know. So yeah, really, really awesome times, and it stuck with me. Yeah, so it's great to have.
And when you say she was a singer, I mean she was a professional singer. What locally around Blackburn, in bands, in clubs? How did it work?
No, the whole of the north. So she did the whole of the north circuit. I think back in the '60s, it was there was the big mecca bingo places and the big halls that it was called big bands. So that it was actually orchestras like 10, 12, 16 pieces. Back in my mum, who would do, she wasn't original, she was covers, but she was, I mean, she sung at the Cavern in Liverpool, she sung at some really big places, you know, that iconic places. And the story goes, verified or not, she got a record contract with EMI to go to London to record, and she stayed in Blackburn to marry my dad and have a family. And that is the actual truth, and so I can't thank her enough for that. But I also have who could I have had of a mum, you know? But no, she was awesome, and still to this day, she loves the singing, loves the getting up and performing, as I seem to have inherited those genes.
Absolutely. And of course, what would happen today, quite rightly, is you would say you can do both. You can have your family and you can go to London and get a record deal. Yeah, you know, that's in a really positive way. I've got two young daughters. That's the message that they can have now, isn't it? You can have it all.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and back then, I think it was very different, you know, and like you say, this technology, look at us now, you know, there's all sorts that you can bridge gaps with. And she had a moment, and she's awesome. And we still listen to the tune that she recorded back then. But no, really good. But she's been my biggest football fan throughout my career. You know, she really has.
Brilliant. Have you been listening to anything different because of lockdown? Have you said, right, I'm at home a bit more than usual, and I actually have never listened to quite enough of ABC. So, you know, we've all got a bit more time. I'm going to listen to this.
No, do you know what? Honestly, I'm so bad. And I probably listen more to what makes me happy. So it's more of the rock, you know, more of the Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, and then going back into the Stones. Doors. You know, I've actually, with the band, the Cold Blooded Hearts you mentioned, we've been trying to write a bit. Rehearsing's been absolute no-no because all the rehearsal rooms are closed. So we have been trying to write a little bit more, and we've been experimenting a little bit with the early Zeppelin stuff. So listening to a little bit of that Zeppelin one, obviously there's famous stories about recording in just a house where they set up a studio on the stairs and things like that. So we've been listening to that, and the sound they got for such a basic setup was unbelievable, iconic sound. So trying to get some influences off that maybe is what we've been doing.
Are you a better football manager for having the music because you have something to take your mind off things?
100%, 100%. I always say that it's my safety net. You know, obviously everyone's got their families and they say that's their safety net, and that's always there, of course. But people do go through issues with that. But the music has always been there for me. It's always been something that I've felt is my safety net. If it all ended tomorrow, I'm not the most accomplished guitarist, but I would pick that up and I would be out there and I would be singing. I'd think, you know, that makes me happy. That's, I've got that. And I think it's really important to have something. I really do. I don't think that I could ever be one of these managers that you see some of them are out of work. They're at every single game that they could be at, and every bit of networking and every newspaper and on the TV. And listen, that's them. That, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It wouldn't be me. I'd go into what I really enjoy. And I think having that allows me to be who I am on the touchline, you know. And I say that I've said recently a lot that the amount of people have said, oh, why don't you cut your hair and being look like the proper manager. And I'm thinking, well, surely I do look like a proper manager. I've been in the job long enough. I've had some good success. And if this is me, this is me. And that's played a big part in me.
I mean, it's great that you have that, because you read, and obviously I interview lots of managers, and it barely looks like they've got a minute to themselves for their families, let alone for any hobby. Do you know what I mean? Because there is so much going on. There are so many demands on them. So do you have to make I know you tend to rehearse. You know, I hate saying when life is normal, but that's the situation we're in. You tend to rehearse on a Monday night, don't you? Obviously, you're not at the moment. So you have to make a physical ploy to carve out some time just for you. Not even for you and your family, just for you. Gareth time, me time.
Yeah, it was, you know. And honestly, Mark, the band, we made a decision. It used to be Thursdays, but then Thursday got a little bit too mental because we'd have a game on a Saturday and I'd be thinking of what I'd done on the Thursday, what I wanted to implement on the Friday in training to get the Saturday's game. The best day for me is Monday. Even if we have a Tuesday game, I've already done my prep on the Monday. all I care about from it used to be 6:30 till about midnight was what lyrics I've got to sing next. That's so all that came into my head, or what note would follow what, or what would sound good if we're writing a song. And that, honestly, it was the biggest release. It was such a great release for me. And then Back to Tuesday was back to what I do. But you know, to have something down on record and to have these guys, what, you know, one was a kitchen designer, one of them works for an electrical company, and one of them works for a film company, but all part-time, the musicians, that's my band, they're normal people. It was brilliant just to mix with these and just get our songs together. It was so cool. It was really, really good. Monday nights I miss, and hopefully we can get back to it soon.
You must be desperate to play a gig in front of a full crowd as much as you are to have a full crowd at a Wickham home game.
Yeah, you know, it's been missed big time. You know, we had a Christmas. It wasn't really a gig. It was an acoustic set that we did that you had to stay under a certain amount of decibels, and everyone had to be sat down eating in the place. And there was only about 40 people in there, but that was the best gig I've played in the last 6 months. But it was really tough because, obviously, being the rocker that I want to be, you know, keeping it low is tough. But it was a good Christmas gig, and obviously, the Christmas song we did with Petr Cech and Wheels in the Willing, that was a great release as well. But yeah, I'd love the crowds back at football, and I'd love to be able to go and gig on a Saturday night somewhere and really blast it out.
The level of responsibility being a manager, Gareth, is enormous anyway. But at the moment, almost this week, never been more so. You know, more testing for EFL clubs, which is great. But even more responsibility on footballers because of those who did breach protocols over Christmas and New Year to stick to what the governments say, because you know that you're incredibly privileged to still be able to do your jobs when a lot of people haven't got a job or can't do their jobs in a normal way. So my question is, are you feeling even more responsibility and saying to all your staff and players, please stick to what we've been asked to do, because otherwise we may not be able to play football at all?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail there, Mark. We are so privileged still to be able to work. I can't imagine what some people... I mean, I had a slight taste of it March, April. We all had that slight taste of nothing, no work, finished. And that was tough. And the sun was shining and we could all go in our gardens. Now, some of these people who've been told they can't go to work, I do feel for them. I'm so lucky I get to mix with my people, not closely, believe me. We do it right at Wickham Wanderers. We're quite proud of the record we've had with the COVID incidents there. We're very minimal. And I sound like a broken record sometimes at work saying, boys, can we be 2 metres apart? Boys, can you eat separately? Can you? And it's a really tough thing to do, but we have to do it. We really do. We're examples to people, and we are so privileged at the moment because people want our sport to still go because it lifts them, but we've got to do it responsibly because, like you say, it's a real serious issue. And I, as a manager, definitely have the responsibilities of my players, my club, and football in general.
Gareth, how on earth are you going to say to them, boys, when you score a goal, don't hug each other? I mean, because it's the instinct. It doesn't matter if you're 5-year-old playing in the playground, it's an instinct. You know, how on earth do you get that message across?
It's absolutely. And every team we've played so far this season, whoever scored, whether it's that team, our team, the boys get together. Like you say, it is the instinct. I actually also think that people watching that on TV, they have that moment of, they enjoy that moment with us. That's going to be really tough to stop. We have said it, and I think there's a couple of issues of people hugging each other and getting too close. It's the face-to-face thing, I think, that's the big one. So there's all sorts of guidelines coming out. The EFL seems to change them weekly or twice a week, and we've got to follow them, and I understand that. There's more qualified people than us to put these rules in place, as long as we follow them. But it is tough. It is tough when somebody scores because... like you say, a 5-year-old in a playground wants to jump on his mates, never mind a person who's scored an important goal in the Championship, 1-2, Premiership, whatever it is. It's such a great feeling, and anyone who has scored, they'll know what I'm talking about.
Are you keeping an eye on your players even more as much as you can, Gareth, away from training as well? Because you can't look after them 24/7, as we all know, but you know, there may be some of them who are finding lockdown harder than others, who may be living on their own or just move to the club, move to a new area, having a breakup with a girlfriend or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Huge in football now. The mental side, we know over the past sort of 5 years, really, it's really come to the front now. And the mental side is huge. And it's something we pride ourselves again at Wickham Wanderers. We have a sports psychologist who comes in weekly. And you're right. We have to look out for some of these signs now. These lonely signs where some of the boys would have, even going to a coffee shop, you feel around people, but you know These boys will be in their house on their own. There's not much open. There's not much to do. What are they doing? And I really, coincidentally, I had a talk with my physio this morning. We could be victim of some games being called off because obviously squads are getting hit by coronavirus. So we have to have contingency plans in place. And I said to my physio this morning, I said, maybe we could take a couple of days off here, a couple of days off here. And he actually said to me, but when we give them days off, we're not in control of them. It's easiest sometimes when they come in and we can control them. And he's got a great point. You know, what are they doing away? It's a trust issue, you know, and it's giving them the right information and giving them the right tools to hopefully deal with this isolation that some of them, I've got boys, 21-year-olds who are from the North, they live in a house and that we supply for them. What, you know, it must be really tough for them. So, we keep an eye out for all the signs that my boys are in good health.
That must be in stark contrast. Go back to the beginning of your playing career. You're desperate to make it for your hometown club and Blackburn call you in one day and say, you're not going to make it. And, you know, the story is, let's be honest, Gareth, of your generation, that was it, wasn't it? You were there to look, you had to fend for yourself, didn't you?
That was
and
it.
And now
it
you
was,
could compare with what it is today when we're talking about how you look after your players today.
Because
in those days, that was, off you go.
No exit route at all. Yeah, no exit route at all. I remember, actually, you say on a day when they called me, it was my 18th birthday, right? Oh. Bang on the day it was. Oh. Yeah, it was my 18th. May the 10th is my birthday. And historically, May is always the month where they'll make the decisions because it's the end of the season. And right, bang on the 18th birthday. So I remember writing a letter with my dad to maybe the 12 or 15 local clubs saying, I've been released. And there's none of that. And it's all internet like we're doing now. It's all phone calls. It's everyone had mobile, back then nobody had a mobile phone. So, like you say, in those days, there was no way other than that to do. You had to deal with it. And I think that it forced you into being a problem solver. It forced you into fending for yourself a little bit more. I'm not saying it made us tougher. No way, because back then there were people who were struggling, but it just wasn't as known and we haven't had the information back then. Now we're well aware, you know, we're really aware of all this information, the social media and the exit routes that need to be put in place for these boys, because we have created this society that we have to look after them, rightly so, you know, rightly so. Gone are the days of hard knocks and all that sort of stuff. And that I'm all for that. But we really do have to work hard now looking after our players and it's very important.
Your dad was key, wasn't he, in helping you, convincing you, encouraging you that you could still have a career?
Yeah, he was the one. He was the one who told me to keep going. He said, at 18 years old, I get released after 2 years at Blackburn and really thought I had a chance. I had a good game in the reserves that week. I remember the game and getting released was the biggest hit of my. I'd never had anything like that, you know, and he said to me, I remember back in the days of maybe having to go and sign on because I needed income support, you know, and I had no wage coming in. I had no skills. I hadn't been to college. I wasn't having university. I was nowhere. I was 18 years old, right? No A levels. I hadn't been to college. Got no university to go to. What happens now? Dad just said, look, you'll make it. He said, I know football. He said, you'll make it. A little bit emotional because I remember the day, but he just guaranteed me. He said, look, you don't have to pay me and your mum anything at the moment. Just, I believe in you. And, you know, within 6 months, I'd made my Football League debut for Preston North End at Shrewsbury Town and never looked back. And again, lucky guy to have the family I've had to support me all through.
Because there are sliding doors moments in everyone's life, Gareth, aren't there? And I'm guessing you played with people at Blackburn who were also released, who were as good as you, who didn't have that support, who probably within, by the time they were 20, may have been out of football altogether. I'm not even talking about league football, may not have even played non-league football.
No, of course. The breaks are there. My break was that I had no support of my dad and I went to train with Preston North End. A guy called Walter Joyce invited me in. Rest his soul, he's the father of Warren Joyce. And he took me and Walter and I just trained with Preston. I wasn't looking for a contract. I just trained with them. And Northwich Victoria were looking for a right winger. Simon McElroy was the manager. I went to play for Northwich Victoria. Another great moment from my dad. He said, don't sign a contract with Northwich Victoria because you'll tie yourself here. You may never get back in the Football League. Simon McElroy was desperate to sign me. He never signed. And how's this for a story? This would never happen nowadays. Thursday evening, I'm at home in Blackburn and we have a game on Saturday for Northwich. and a scout from Preston North End rings the house phone with the one phone that you have in the hallway. I answer the phone and say, he said, "Oh, it's such and such from Preston North End." He said, "Do you fancy playing for the first team on Saturday?" That was the call. And I'm 19 years old, or 18, 19 years old, going, and I said, "Dad, scout's asking me, do I want to play for Preston North End's first team away at Shrewsbury on the Saturday? They've lost, I think Lee Ashcroft was injured. They lost a couple of players." And I'm thinking, prank calls weren't even invented by then. No. So this was genuine, you know. This
no
was
one heard of Jeremy
call.
Beadle yeah, then, yeah. No.
So it was, it was absolutely surreal. So I played on the Saturday at Shrewsbury Town away. I had no contract. All I signed was the document that allowed me to play in the Football League. Northwich were devastated. So I had to ring Sammy saying, "I'm not playing for you on Saturday. I'm playing for Preston North End." They gave me a contract after that. And again, another release at the end of that season, but Cambridge, John Beck, and wow, just went then. But that day, I mean, that wouldn't happen now. You'd have someone in the academy. You'd have someone ready. You'd get a loan player in, you know, but they ring me on a Thursday thinking, hell, we've got an all right winger. Ring that lad who's been on trial with Walter. It's the crazy story.
I mean, I think it's amazing because I remember Mark Bright, you know, Crystal Palace, who I work with a lot, Mark, lovely man, saying to me, he went, "Believe me, Mark, that there were players better than me in the school team." But, you know, but that's only a quarter of the story. You have to have the determination. You have to have the luck. You've obviously got to stay free of injury. And you've got to be able to take the knockbacks. You've got to be able to take it. No one's career in any field of life just goes like that. You've got to be able to deal with it. So there are some people who couldn't deal with it aged 18 like you could, who just, that was it. The dream was over. They're out of the game.
I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. For me, here's 70% of the game, honestly. It really is. You've got to have that basic level of talent. But I remember being on the pitch and I found a way to win. I'd find a way to win that tackle, to win that header, to get past my fullback, even though there were better players than me and somehow made it right to the top level. But I was amazed that some of these players hadn't. And when I look back, it's up here. It was not totally up here, but the desire to get yourself fitter, that comes from here. The desire to win that tackle, win that header, this all comes from here. This isn't you're skillful doing a Cruyff turn and pass it. That's the basic stuff down here. But like you say, the resilience to build, and I'd never heard the term resilience until probably late in my 20s, but realised that growing up in Blackburn and taking the hard knocks that I took, and it's not an easy place to grow up, you know, going on the street, playing with my brother, boys with the ball, and you play against them and you end up in maybe a little tussle, or that all built me up to be this resilient guy. And so that maybe the environment, a lucky place to grow up in as well for me. But definitely Mark's right, you know, there's so many better players than me around, talented, but I think desire wise I'll give everyone a go. Mm-hmm.
And is that why you feel you have a natural affinity with several players you have at Wickham and have had over the years who've been rejected by other clubs? And you think, I've spot something in there. I could have got an affinity with that player. I know that they can make it.
Absolutely. Absolutely love seeing that in players, you know. And that is, whether it's me being able to spot it because that was me, or maybe I've just got this knack of being able to spot these rough diamonds. I think probably more the former, because that was me once. Players like your Alex Samuel, Curtis Thompson, these boys were told in League Two they weren't good enough to make it. They're playing in the Championship. I mean, and playing well in the Championship, it's just fills me with pride to see these guys that were told once, no, you are just like I was, you weren't good enough. It's awesome, you know, and even the big man Hakim Fenway, you know, he's again told that he was too big to play, told he'd never make it, and at League Two when they got promoted at Wimbledon was told, look, I think that's as far as you can take us. We wouldn't be in the Championship if it wasn't for him. And again, his story for me resonates as much as the Samuels and the Thompsons and the younger boys I've got. So, not awesome.
He still thinks he'll be in Liverpool's Champions League squad soon, doesn't he? He still thinks there's one more chapter in that story. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's believe me, there's a lot of chapters left in Akinfenwa's story. And we'll see him in I'm a Celebrity or whatever. He will win it. He is charismatic. That guy is awesome. But he channels it in such a good way. Yeah.
4 years ago, I stood in front of you and I was technically unemployed. 4 years ago, I was here and I was technically unemployed.
That's correct.
And what did you say? Let me tell you something. The only person that can hit me up on WhatsApp this time is Klopp, so we can celebrate together. You get me?
Oh.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
On Wrestle Me This Week, we talked about the worst way to accept a Hall of Fame award.
They were just telling you suck it.
You suck, and then he pours milk over
his head.
What is this?
Pouring milk over yourself is absolutely something that if you did it once in any scenario, people would never forget it. We were just having Christmas dinner and like, you know, he just poured 2 litres of milk over himself.
Or if you're more in the mood for some awkward anecdotes, Alex shared his experience with the cast of Event Horizon on this week's Clash of the Titles.
We meet Smitty, played by Sean Pertwee, a man who I bumped into in a bar having never interviewed, and literally chewed his ear off, trapped him in a corner of a booth where he couldn't actually stand up and get away from me, and talked to him incessantly about this film. Later on in the night, his wife said to me, Sean's outside if you want to carry on talking to him about Event Horizon.
All that and more at Sukarnov.
Again, life is all about taking opportunities. You might think you'll go down a certain path, then something happens. When you were at QPR, and I think you said you were training to be a physio, is that right? And Luigi De Canio was the manager. And because your wife's Venezuelan, you speak some Spanish, and you ended up being an interpreter. Was that like a Was that a real seminal moment in your career? So you're going down one path and then he says something to you and you're going, oh, actually, maybe this management or coaching path.
It's true, though. I wanted to be a physio. I spent so long in the treatment room at Wimbledon. When I had my move to the Premier League, I thought, you know enough about the body now, Gareth. And I wanted to stay in football. I loved football. I loved fitness. But when Luigi took over, he didn't speak a word of English, you know, and he had a great brand of football, but he used to try and get his point across. And I'd understand a few of the words and I think, I know what he's trying to say here. So I stepped up and said, look, I do speak some Spanish and Italian Spanish very close. I'll start translating to the boys. And he'd watch me translate, and I wouldn't translate exactly, but I'd say it in a way that footballers would understand. At the end of the season, he came to me and said, look, guys, he said, take your badges. He said, you've got a great way about the players. He said, you know about the game. He said, I've heard some of the stuff you've said. It's not been exactly what I've said, but you've got the boys to do it. And he was the one really who said to me, get into it. Because I was one of those players, Mike, that I'd come in at half-time sometimes and some of my midfielders would be saying, well, that guy in the pocket, he's causing the problems. And I'd be like, I haven't seen this in the game. I just want to get past my fullback and get a crossing, you know. Who's the guy in the pocket? What formation are they playing, you know? So as a player, very sort of tunnel vision about myself, what I wanted to do. So I've had to learn the tactical side. I've had to look and really, and I think that's helped as well, really know that I was nowhere near a coach, but worked really hard to be a coach and worked really hard and still working hard. You know, there's some fantastic manager. And again, just like I was as a player, there's a lot better managers than me, but I worked my socks off to do it.
But you feel the one-on-one, the little word here and there, is as important as any tactical acumen that you
absolutely
have.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm obviously glass half full. Everyone knows that without a shadow of a doubt. And I can get these players, not get them. I can make them feel like they can achieve things that even they don't believe they can achieve, you know, and I've got this knack because people did it to me. And it's so important that if you treat them like just they are, then that's what they'll be. But if you treat them like what they could be, they'll aspire to that. And it's so important. It's such an important weapon here. Again, we're back to this, but that's why I have these little one-to-one chats. So I get my lone players and I make sure I sit them down on a Monday, go through their clips with them and say, right, what do you think you could have done better? Well, I know you can do that better. And I've seen you do that. And they go out the room thinking, I can do this, you know, and that's important rather than going out the room going, oh, I hope I don't do that again because you didn't like that. I want them to go, I can do this. I can go and do this. I then do what he wants, you know. So that's my style, yeah.
But interesting, because the first person I did in this series was Stuart Pearce. And he said Brian Clough wasn't, you know, a tactical genius. But what his strength was, what you've just described. Just a little word, a little thumbs up, just a tiny little word. You know, it might be about how he defended that day or whatever. So I think the point I'm trying to make is, I think particularly today, because we have such brilliant tactical dissection on the television, you know, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, they do it absolutely brilliantly.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I think we all think that football is 100% about tactics all the time. And then we look back at that era, Brian Clough, even probably early Alex Ferguson, and go, actually, there's a huge amount of man management in there. We mustn't just completely be befuddled by the whole thing's a tactical race rather than actually, as you say, a mental thing and a man management thing. That's as much a key as anything, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The amount of teams that said in the press last year before games, and I'm still saying it now, we know exactly what Wickham do. We know exactly how they play. Well, stop us then. How come they can't stop someone like Ekpemba? How come they can't, if they know that, because these guys, they're on that pitch, they're together, they're superhuman when they're together. And these moments, these human moments, will outweigh the tactical moments any day of the week. They really will do, you know. And I totally agree with you. I think there's some fantastic tacticians about. And I look in awe at your Pep Guardiola's and your Jose Mourinho's. You know, I look in awe at Jurgen Klopp sometimes. But I think Klopp also is very much on the human side like me. I really do, you know. When he ran on, I can't remember, was it last year, the year before, when he ran on to celebrate with his keeper. Remember that? When he ran on the pitch and jumped on his keeper.
Yes. Yeah,
I'd do that.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's very cute.
You know, yeah. So, not saying
you only have to see the way he hugs his players on the full-time whistle to see what it is with him.
And that's the thing. And if you come into Wickham Wanderers training ground on a Monday morning, win, lose or draw, the music will be on. I'll be in the gym, and they'll know I'm in the gym because I'll be super positive. Come on, boys! Woo! Here we go. And another new week. There's no let's look at the problems. Let's see what happened. We know we can solve these problems. Not, this is not good enough. It's totally the opposite. And that's the way I'll do it. And that's the way I'll stand by it. Yeah.
So 6 years ago, as I said in the intro, you went to Torquay on the last day and you could have easily gone down and out of the Football League altogether back into the Conference. You wrote that you felt very calm that morning, even before the game, that had you made a sort of mental switch in your own mind about how you were going to approach management thereafter, even before the match?
Yes, definitely. But it was almost like, if I get away with this, I have to change. But I've got to focus totally on this, you know. And I said to the boys about other teams that needed results, if we can score early, what it would do to them, again, the mental side of things. And of course that happened. But I just, that week, I convinced myself we were going to win and we were going to stay up. And I convinced myself, it's one of my finest weeks, I think, to try and convince myself, even though everything else was against us, we're the smallest club, we had the smallest budget, we probably had the players who weren't as good as the other clubs, and we were away from home and we needed a miracle. But I can still convince myself that week, because I thought to myself, if I convince myself and I come in every day saying we're going to do this, sooner or later the players are going to start thinking, the first day they might think, what an idiot. The second day they might think, what an idiot, but he's still going on about it. The third day, you know, we might do this. The fourth day, the Thursday, you know what, I'm with the gaffer, you know, on the fifth. And the Saturday, I woke up that morning, and this is a true story as well. I woke up, we stay in hotels. For some reason, I had the most fantastic room, just looking totally out on the Atlantic Ocean, right on the seafront. And I looked out and it was absolute mill pond, as calm as you like. And I just thought then, we're going to do this today. We are going to do this. It's just all these little moments. Went to the boys, said it. And then, as you say, we changed after that game as a whole, as a staff. I changed the whole way I managed. And I thought to myself, you've got away with that one, Gareth. You've got to now change and become, still be you, but you've got to make some changes.
In the Football League, since the start of the 1993-94 season, Wycombe Wanderers, they don't want to give that up. And they want a third! Are they going to get it? McClure with a beautiful lob over the goalkeeper. Well, those Wycombe supporters are celebrating because they know it's all over at the Memorial Ground. Bristol Rovers have been beaten. Wycombe victorious. They are staying up. And look what it means to Gareth Ainsworth. It is all over here. And the celebrations can start for Wycombe Wanderers. They will stay in the Football League.
So what did you? What have you changed? What did you change as a result?
I changed from tracksuit to suit, because I've been a player and I went to manager and I stayed in my kit in my tracksuit, and I just thought that I'm not really a massive fan of going of suit and tracksuit, because we are football managers, so kit's fine to wear. But I thought, I need to make a visual change here. Get your jacket on, get your shirt on, make that change, because you're known as Gareth. Who'd always be there for the lads and would be in there with the banter. And all. You've got to change now. So a visual change was there. The mental change was, right, it's Gaffer now. I'm not Gaz anymore, because people were still calling me Gaz. And even those little things I thought would change the mentality. And then the decisions that I had to make. I'd played with these players that I took over, and I had to get rid of some. And some even played for me at Torquay. I had to get rid of them and go, right, I don't believe that these will take us forward. I have to get players in my style. They might take someone else forward. That's not, but for me, the way I want to do things, I have to change. And I had to change quite a few of the playing staff as well. And thankfully we haven't looked back, and we've had success throughout ever since. But it was a real rude awakening that. And I think Nigel Pearson had one at Carlisle long time ago as well. And I've had the same thing. And no matter,
yeah, he was there on the Jimmy Glass day, actually, wasn't he Nigel Pearson?
Yeah, he was. But no matter what manager comes up against me, and no matter how well some of these guys do it, and some go straight in at the top and they stay at the top, to have that day in 92nd in the Football League, or 91st, I think, Torquay were 92nd, to have that day, I think he's one of the best things that ever happened to me. It really is, you know, and I'll always cherish that day.
Can you compare that elation to beating Oxford and getting into the Championship?
it is a different elation, without a shadow of a doubt. The Oxford one was on the culmination of that 6 years since then of just a build and a build, and we actually turned to each other. We said, "What have we done?" That's what me and my assistant manager said to us. "What have we done?" Like it was unheard of, which it really is. But that was it was different, but it was a fantastic occasion that night, you know. And again, one of the nights I'll never ever forget, you know, to see some of the boys in tears, literally in tears, like you see at the end of films sometimes when it's been staged in Hollywood, people on their phone and crying and hugging, and that it was so genuine, because there was no fans there, Mark. Nobody ran off to celebrate with their own personal friends or family. It was just us together. And I remember Wembley stewards that night saying, it was about 11:30, 11:40, and they're saying, please, we can go home, because nobody usually celebrates this long at Wembley. Usually go off somewhere, but we were still there.
Yeah.
And they were, please, we need to lock up. So it was a brilliant night.
Taylor, Wheeler, tried to add another playoff final goal. He'd have been far better running to the corner, as we still play. Stewart came to win it. Wickham! What celebrations, what emotion at an empty Wembley. Wickham into the championship for the first time in their history.
I mean, of course, it's such a shame you can't have fans in your ground at the moment. No one can have fans. I wonder if you feel, I'm just looking at the places where you've played as a player. You played at Port Vale, you played at Lincoln, you played at Walsall, some on loan. You know, you obviously mentioned Preston. You really realise how important these clubs are to their communities, don't you, Gareth? Particularly at the moment when things financially are so tight for them. And all we can do is keep our fingers crossed, to be blunt, that none of them go to the wall. Because if they do, that is a pillar of the community that goes, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, football in this country is a religion. It really is. It's so important to people's lives. You know, people will go, it affects people. It affects their mood for the week. It is a pillar. It's their safety net. I've got my music. This is some people's safety net, this game. And I think that it's so important. Without football, honestly, it hasn't been the same. For me, without fans, this game is not the same. It really isn't the same. And for the first seven games, we lost them all. I'd have probably been getting a lot of stick, but I still missed that. That might have put me on my toes a little bit more. So we definitely are missing the fans in football. It is their safety net. It is what they need. And I can't wait till they're back. Honestly, being bluntly honest, I cannot wait till they're back. I thrived off the fans. Some players used to say, the fans don't affect me. I don't hear them. I'm thinking, seriously, you're lying, or there's something wrong with me, because I hear every little shout, every big song. You know, when your name's getting sung, or when you score, and you, there's no better feeling, honestly. So these fans, they drive this game, you know, and the energy between the players and the fans is something spectacular for me. So come back soon when it's safe. I hope we can get them back.
I mean, quite often you're driven by the opposition fans giving you a hard time.
Yeah,
I mean,
course,
I remember
yeah.
I asked this. I did an interview with Jose Mourinho the other day. We'll get to your cup tie in a second. And I said, how much are you missing and all this? I said, even the away fans, he went, oh, I loved it when the coach drew up at Man City. It doesn't matter if he's managing Man United, Chelsea or Tottenham. You know, he said, I loved all that, seeing all their fans, because it's part of what makes this game so great. So you miss that as much.
Absolutely.
Well, you should miss that as a player as much. Somebody giving you stick from the opposition terraces.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the proven wrong comes into it then. And you know, I always enjoy the opposition fans. I always enjoy what they... And do you know what? If a team does well and they beat you and the opposition fans are celebrating, and sometimes I'm in awe of the opposition going, they've been so good today. They've got behind their team so well today, you know? And you have to... At the end of the day, we're in this same umbrella of football, you know? So, it is a big loss, honestly, a real big loss. And to managers, you know, I've had some great stories over the years with fans, and obviously the long hair and the look sometimes is an easy target, but if they can take the pressure off the boys, then I'll take it all day.
So, you gave Tottenham a real scare at this stage 3 or 4 years ago when Maurizio Pochettino was in charge the fourth round. Now you've got Jose. That's going to be great, isn't it?
absolutely. You know, I've got a huge amount of respect for this guy. You know, I think, again, he's forever being followed around the publicity and the press and everything. I think he handles it superbly well. What he's achieved, again, he's just phenomenal in football. You know, really is. You know, when you look at his trophies and his awards and his accolades. For me to be on, and I really mean this, for me to be on the same, I mean, what is it, benches, the same bench, just 10, 20 yards apart as Jose Mourinho, it's an honour. It really is, you know, and it's something that, like when I played, and I played on the same pitch as somebody, you know, Patrick Vieira or Frank Lebeuf, who just come back from winning the World Cup. These are moments that they stay with you. And so to have that, to be against someone of that ilk, believe me, we're going to give it our all, and we're going to be the Wickham that we can be. But again, I'll really pinch myself and think, you know what? Wow, this is a lad from Blackburn's not done too bad here.
Yeah, because let's sort of end where we began with music, because he's a bit of a rock star, really, Jose, isn't he? And it's no surprise that so many musicians appears to be want to be footballers, and so many footballers would love to be musicians. And of course, there's a natural analogy there of adulation and playing to the crowd and so forth. But there does appear to be that synergy, doesn't there, between football and rock stars?
Yeah, totally. And like you say, it's the extrovert in us all, you know, and the performing in front of a crowd. But there's also some creativity in it as well that probably goes untapped into here, that, you know, the way the brain works and what people want to see and what people want to hear. And so, it's going to be awesome, you know. And they say Jose has got he's got this reputation of being this flamboyant guy, and it almost could be a rock star himself. So, you know, really, like you say, be proud to welcome him to Wickham, and hopefully we can get the result.
So my lockdown musical lesson from you, Gareth, is what? You said a bit of early Led Zepp. Is that what it is? Because I've got a list. I'm working my way through. A lot of suggestions from various musical friends of mine. Happy to add early Led Zepp to my list.
Yeah, Led Zeppelin 1. You can't go too wrong with that album. So yeah. you get that from cover to cover. I think you'll be a happy man.
Brilliant. Gareth, listen, it's been great to catch up with you. Thank you very much indeed. It's a really wonderful story. And stay well, your family stay well, and we look forward to that cup tie in particular.
Likewise. Thank you, Mark.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year. just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.